The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You're now in the Essential Zone, where we seek to be informative, inspirational, enlightening, and dynamic. But more importantly, we seek to be fair and balanced. There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes? There comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The essentials. Serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation. And good evening and welcome to The Essentials, The Reset. Here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, I am your host, Hubert Edwards. And we're going to have ourselves, again, another wonderful conversation. The numbers are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, and we're inviting you to join in on the conversation. I am sure that you're going to want to be a part of this. Of course, you can also text us at 422-4796. That's 422-4796, 422-GR96. So what has been happening in the world today? Yesterday or the day before, we heard that Putin pulled back some of his troops from Ukraine. Today we are hearing that that is not so, actually. There may be even 7,000 more. And so are we closer to having a war, conflict between Russia and Ukraine? And will that conflict then pull in the NATO, the allies? And does that spell trouble for the rest of the world? I think it's very, very important that we understand how these things, even though they're far away from our doorstep, but they come right to it. And so we need to understand that. We have a guest who will be introducing very shortly. But before we do that, let's jump back into what we've been talking about, Take Five. So we're asking you, it's a simple, sometimes the way I explain it, make it sound complex, but, you know, pull out your individual take from this. So Take Five. And what does Take Five means? It asks us, each of us, to take five, whether it's 5 minutes or $5 or some variation of five in your attempt to give back to the world, to give back to society, to help someone. So yesterday, for example, I went someplace and a young man, he asked me for some money. You know, he says, you know, I'm washing cars, but right now I'm a little bit popped down. That was his exact words. And so I had just gotten back some change, 50 cents, and he actually asked me for 50 cents. I gave him the 50 cent. And then, you know, I thought about it. I was walking away and said, no, this is the time, this is the opportunity. Put your stuff in, roll back, heal him up and say, come get your $5 because we're taking five to ensure that you are better off. The young man got up, took it, realized it was $5, and he was very, very thankful, you know, just over the top, I think. As I quietly moved away, he made a beeline to the Chinese store. Obviously, he went to get some food. And that really was, you know, an interesting observation for me. Because sometimes we always give and there's this concern at the back of our minds as to exactly what persons will use the funds for. I have long ago decided, well, if somebody asks me, I will give it and then, you know, I just don't worry about what they're doing. But let's take five. And if you don't have $5, then maybe you want to take 5 minutes to encourage someone to speak into somebody's life. Or it may be difficult for you to do anything in 5 minutes. So why not say, 5 minutes for 6 days equal half an hour. I'm going to put aside half an hour every single week, and I'm going to make that available for someone to touch them, to encourage them, to inspire them, to help them on their journey, to help them through their own transformation. However you choose to do it, it's perfectly fine. Or you want to say, if I can't give you $5 at any one point in time, I'm going to put aside $260 for the year. That's what it translates to. $5 per week translates to $260 per year. I am going to put in my budget, mentally or otherwise, $260, and I'm going to make sure that this $260 either go to person individually, $5 at a time or so, or I'm going to put it all together one time. Or if you're a big top shot or a business and you can afford it, why not put away $500 and see how we can help a couple of families? Or, as we are trying to do, to help persons, to grow them, to uplift them, to empower them. Maybe as a business, you want to take on some apprentices, maybe for 5 months at a time, five at a time, however you want to do it. We're just playing with the number five. And certainly, we have outlined our big, big, big ambition this year to get some scholarships, $50,000 for students, where we will give them 5 years scholarship all the way through high school or through primary school or wherever we choose to, where we think the impact is going to be the greatest. And so if you're out there and you want to be a recipient of our 5 minutes, 30 minutes, we are offering, I am offering, 2 weekly 30 minutes session with anyone who chooses to. You just need to hit me up. My number is 376-8951. That's 376-8951. And we'll arrange it. It will be ongoing. We will help you. We will seek to help you. I will seek to help you. I will seek to find persons who can better help you if I can. And we will try to kind of walk you through to a different place. And so we want all of us to join in the discussion, joining on the discussion as to how we are going to help people. And so this evening we have a gentleman, Ambassador Devon Roll, is here to speak with us. And Ambassador Roll is a music producer, he's a singer, he's an inspirational speaker. He has been all over the world. He has been to Cayville, Barbados, University of the Bahamas, when it was the college. He has done stuff with a group called Barak. But very, very importantly, I want us to discuss something which he is a part of, CTI. And CTI is a feeding initiative for inner city persons. And he has been doing this now for a number of years. And we want to welcome for the first time to The Essentials, Ambassador Devon Roll. Welcome. Ambassador Roll, are you there?
Thank you so much. I'm sorry, I was muted. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure and honor to be on the show today with you, sir. I've listened to your show many times and I've been impressed each time. And I consider it an honor to be on with you today.
Certainly, I'm humbled to hear that. And it is my pleasure and my honor to have you here with me. We're going to have a conversation. It's not structured. We just want to talk. We just want to talk real talk like men on the street. We want to be, you know, standing on the corner. We're having some real conversation. Here is where I want to start this conversation with you today. In the write-up that you sent to me, you said,
yes, sir,
over these years, many of the homes we have that we physically entered only possess water in the fridge and nothing else. That's where I want to start with you. Talk to us.
Wow. Well, sir, seven years exactly, I was led to start a movement and organization called the Community Touch Initiative. It's connected to my church, Kingdom Discipleship Center. And the impetus of it was to go into the inner city and to give light, to give encouragement. And I actually considered it an atmospheric assignment. The instruction was to go and take grocery bags into a community, an unsuspecting community, and we did it on Saturday mornings. When I did it the first time, my intent, I thought it was only a one-time initiative that I was feeling led by God to do. Mm-hmm. When I did it this one time 7 years ago, I was blown out of the water. We went into the East Street area, the DeVoe Street, Young Street areas. And we went into homes where people literally had only a bottle of water in the fridge and nothing at all in the cupboards. And we took a bag of grocery. As a matter of fact, we did 100, I think it was 100 to 120 bags. And there were mothers crying on me like children. They were so grateful that we came. And we went early Saturday morning, knocked on the doors. And all I asked to do, I said, we wanted to be a blessing. They thought we were politicians coming in. And we said, no, we just felt led to come and be a blessing to your home. And I would ask them, can we pray for your home? And can we leave a grocery bag? And of course, nobody ever denied the prayer or the grocery bag. And after that one initiative, I felt compelled to continue doing it. So what we did at first is every month, one Saturday out of every month, we sold 100 to 120 grocery bags into 100 to 120 homes. We would just show up like 7:30 in the morning, knock on the door, ask permission to say a prayer and to be a blessing with the grocery bags. Mm-hmm. We went into almost every inner city on New Providence, and we even did some of the family islands. And when we went into these homes, back then there was no Dorian yet. There was no COVID pandemic yet. But the homes were already in a very demoralized state economically. The world recession that started many years before, still, in my opinion, lingering in our nation and in the Western area, hemisphere. And when I prayed about it, the inspiration that I got was this effort was to demonstrate love and to also be a detractor, really, from crime escalating. You would be amazed as we went into these communities, the amount of boys who they told us were bad boys or gun boys who came and embraced us, thanking us for the effort. And so it opened my eyes. And to this day, we are still engaged in the initiative, though not as often as we were back then.
Yeah, and I think that's so important, what you laid out, because very often when we go through traumatic situations like we are now, and COVID, the COVID crisis, both the health crisis and the financial crisis, is certainly traumatic for individuals and traumatic for a country. But when go through big issues like these, it's very easy to point the finger and say, persons are struggling because of COVID. Persons are struggling because of the current crisis. But the reality is that at least I'm proposing this, and you can you can lead me down the path that you wish to take. I am proposing that we have some very, very fundamental underpinnings of poverty and suffering and want in the country even long before we have gone through this crisis. Am I right or am I wrong?
You are 100% correct. I'm going to say something here that many of your listeners may be shocked to hear. In certain quarters, what happened as a result of the pandemic may have actually been a blessing to certain people. Because during the pandemic, we have seen a rising up of care where so many organizations, not just the church, but many churches, many organizations, and even the government went into their pockets and fed countless amounts of Bahamians on a consistent basis. We have never in my lifetime seen such a social initiative as was launched during this pandemic. I remember the former prime minister quoted a figure, I forget of how many million dollars were spent on a consistent basis to feed Bahamians who were not at work, who were disenfranchised. But like you were highlighting, the thing that was not highlighted was that many of these people before COVID were in a distressed state. Mm-hmm. And many of them were not nowhere as near being sufficiently helped as they needed.
Yeah. As we get to what we are hoping to be the end of this crisis, we certainly see the level of infection. The infection rates are moving in a very positive direction. The economy is reopening. We see tourism is bouncing back. But one of my concern, Ambassador Roll, is the fact that we are now faced with some different type of headwinds. For example, The cost of food is rising. There was a view that we could have pulled back on our social support, but even just this week in the news, we see where there is still a rising demand. We also have coupled with the fact that many individuals, those who were at whatsoever level, able to secure economic endeavors, and they may have been securing income at whatsoever levels they were capable of at the time, pre-COVID. In many instances, that's gone. In many instances, the circumstances have changed. And my concern, my fear is that as we go into this new era of normalness, if you will, the care that you saw rise up during the midst of the crisis may start to wane, and as a result of that, persons may become challenged again.
Sir, if that happens, and if our governmental leaders, social work leaders, and our church, if we take that position, this country will see a crisis that it has not ever seen before. The level of it will be catastrophic.
Why do you say that?
I'm gonna add to the experiences that I've shared so far and that you've also shared. I just recently went on a walk with a school in my community. And the reason the school did this walkabout was because they have not seen, whether virtually or in person, hundreds of students since the pandemic began. But this particular school was over 100. And other schools add to the hundreds.
Is this a primary school since the pandemic began? What level is this school at?
It's a primary school in the Centerville area. Mm-hmm. And we went and walked the community, and the students, many of them don't have access to any kind of computer, iPad, or smartphone device. They don't have any uniform. And clearly there was no great accountability because in many instances had the parent or a guardian called or made some initiative, help could have been given. But they are in such dire straits, no uniform, hurting for food supplies, because even though I went on that school mission, I was noting the state of the people in terms of their home and their environment, and it was in a rough situation. Mm-hmm. So If we think that we can say, oh, things are getting back to normal, let's go back to our normal affairs in terms of how we ran society before, that would be a dangerous move. There's a whole lot of research. There's a whole lot of getting on the ground that needs to happen. Like I said, 7 years ago, I started the monthly grocery going into community initiative. I continue to do that. We now did it since the pandemic started, but so many other arms coming on. We kind of relaxed it and did it like every 2 or 3 months. And what I started doing also was giving gas coupons in our walkabout. And I also, in many cases, had to assist people with their rent or home mortgage payments. Because what is really happening is an attack, though whether intentional or not, on our middle class. And the Bahamas, as it hasn't seen, I'd say in 6-7 decades, is now seeing where this middle class grouping is being depleted, and you can see so more clearly the distinction between the poor and the wealthy. Mm-hmm. And what happens to when you have wealthy people in governmental leadership or even just at the high levels of our community and society, sometimes they fall out of a touch and they don't know what's happening on the ground. So we have to be engaging people who are on the ground and seeing the real state of affairs of our inner city people.
The level of, well, let me not ask you that way. As you move around and you speak with mothers, fathers, young people, what type of a sense are you getting as to the state of minds or the kind of the mental state? I'm not asking you for a clinical analysis here, but you know, from a layman perspective, what sense are you getting as to, you know, the mental undergirding of these individuals. Are we doing well? Are we strong? Are persons displaying concerns, fear, anxiety? What are the things that they're saying to you?
That's a very good question. What's really strong, and the state of the global affairs have I would say made this situation very complicated in terms of a proper analysis. Let me explain. I was very concerned before, again, the pandemic, and even Dorian, about the mindset of the average Bahamian on the ground, because many of them who were not employed or underemployed had taken more of a hustle mindset, mm-hmm. as opposed to a, let me be creative, let me see if I can start a business initiative of my own. They were more so relying, especially I'm talking inner city here, on let me see who I can hustle today. And I started saying stuff like the Bahamas now looks like what New York looked like pre-Giuliani. But so many people with schemes and vices to try and hustle a buck from somebody else. And this was a concern of mine. Now, I have to temper that because, truthfully, the economic tragedies that have happened with the successive hurricanes and now also this pandemic, it has really brought some people who were well-intentioned, who wanted to work, who wanted to start a business or had started a business. Now they are in dire straits because the economy has caused their efforts to come dwindling down. And because I've been involved in feeding programs, many people who were very lifted up, for example, in middle management or upper middle management of a hotel or business of that sort, came really to their knees and having to stand on feeding lines because they had no income coming in. So what we need, because I'm concerned about the hustle mentality, because I truly believe that every human has been gifted from God with something that they can do for themselves. Dr. Miles Monroe used to say, work your job from 9 to 5, but work your work when you get off. In essence, he would say, whatever that thing that you're called to do, that assignment that God has placed upon your life, begin to pursue that. And I think that needs to be a massive effort of encouraging Bahamians, and not just Bahamians, but this region in general, to search within concerning their creative giftings. Because whether you are employed or not, you need to start to work with your hands in that thing that you are gifted in.
So you see this as a situation where persons need to be empowered. Persons need to start to focus on their own personal development, growth.
Yes.
We need to create opportunities, yes. where individuals can, and you know, like you said, I mean, hustling means something totally different to you. I'm glad you explained it. But we have to move from, we have to seek to get persons from the state of living day to day, hand to mouth, to a position where they're able to think bigger, to think longer, to live in a more sustainable way, to dream bigger and to become more tangible, if you will, in their own existence.
Yes. Here's how I've been motivating the congregation where I sit. The first thing I said, in all crisis, the first thing, do not panic. Mm-hmm. Panic elevates, whether a doctor gives you a bad report or you lose your job or the rent is due, do not panic. Panic causes the elevation of your pressure, and the elevation of your pressure causes your body to stop functioning the way it should function. You'd be amazed at the amount of people who have passed away because of elevated pressure due to panic, more so than a sickness. Mm-hmm. I'll leave that right there. So I said, do not panic. Take a deep breath, pray, and again, ask God for direction. And the direction from God is usually going to come in an area of your gifting. Because in the midst of this crisis, this pandemic, if you look past the smoke, you will see that there is a creative group of people who went from being low-level millionaires or even low-level billionaires to triple-digit millionaires and billionaires. How did that happen? Amidst the crisis, there are tremendous opportunities that exist, but you cannot see it with eyes that are in panic mode. I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. For example, we have such great opportunities in the world right now when it comes to intellectual property. the pandemic has not changed that. If you are gifted to write music, if you're gifted to write computer programs, if you're gifted to create any sorts of apps or things in the technical or digital arena with a smartphone device, which almost every person has, or every home has, you can begin to create opportunities that will bring resources in from outside of the country. Because once you are good at what you do, like Martin Luther King would say, if you sweep streets well, they'll find you in the desert because you sweep streets like Michelangelo painted pictures. So we have to change the how we motivate and speak to people in this time, because in every crisis, there are opportunities. Yes, go ahead, sir.
I agree with you. I agree with you on one level. But yeah. I'm going to disagree with you, not 100%, but generally speaking, that when we talk about persons leveraging stuff like intellectual properties and so on and so forth, we are, in fact, speaking to a grouping or a class of individuals who have been up to now empowered in some ways, or they would have done some groundwork. But when we're talking about the individual who is largely unskilled, without resources, living in an environment where, you know, all around them, the environment seemed to be challenged, you know, multiple persons living in the same household, many children, mouth to feed, and that sort of thing. When we're talking about persons who are living at or below the poverty line, right, that type of a conversation doesn't arise. We have to really get to the root of what's driving them, the root of what's holding them in their current circumstances. And we have to put in, I would think, a whole lot of work to actually convince them that there is a path and a way out of this. And in that process, we must necessarily be in a position to start fulfilling some of their physical needs. Otherwise, they're not going to be convinced that there are opportunities out there.
Have you had the opportunity to watch the Serena and Venus stories yet?
No.
I think you should. It's incredible.
Why?
It's incredible to see where they were at that grassroots poor level, but the insight of their father to say, these girls are talented. I'm going to do what I have to create and find opportunities for them to succeed. And because of that sheer will and determination and drive, and they do highlight the fact that he was a religious man as well, multi-millionaire persons, he pursued them and said, you don't want to miss the opportunity of this child. So I'm not saying that it isn't a struggle and it doesn't now, it's gonna require great.
Now, Ambassador Rule, like I said, we're having a real conversation.
You
have been to houses, you have knocked on doors, you have woken up persons, you know, because, you know, when you turn up at some of those places at 7:30, some people still sleeping, right? And usually when a man is shaken from his sleep is the purest way you can find him at any moment in the day, right?
Yep.
So we understand the story naturally. I haven't watched the thing, but we're familiar with Serena and Venus. We understand the story. But these persons are not Serena's father. These are individuals who have not yet gotten to the level of awareness of what is possible. These are individuals who went to bed thinking about what is going to happen for breakfast and lunch tomorrow, yeah?
Right.
And might be sleeping at 7:30 for the main reason that waking up earlier than that will cause them to worry even more. And so when you turn up there, you are like a godsend, and all of a sudden you solve a huge problem. So while I'm not denying what you're saying, fundamentally, it can work and persons are out there doing this. I am focused on that individual who has not yet gotten to the level of awareness, to the level of understanding that maybe they have that power within them to make that type of a transition.
Well, let me say this. I need you and the audience to appreciate that I am speaking not only to the individual who is impoverished, who is hurting, who is like, what are we going to eat tomorrow? I'm speaking to the village. I'm speaking to the village to say that this is how we need to speak to people. This is how we need to look for the talents and the gifts, because I tell you something. Years ago, I tried to present a program to, I'd say, a particular ministry. I don't want to isolate the exact ministry. Mm-hmm. But I said to them, I wanted to train persons from every high school on the island. And I said, I don't want any money. All I want you to do is endorse the effort that I was going to put out. And the impetus of what I wanted to do was, I wrote a letter and I said, in many cases, the students who are most deviant and most impoverished have a outstanding gift that is being overlooked because of the circumstances that they're facing, whether the impoverishment, their behavior, their lack of school attendance, whatever the case is. I said, if I can speak to them and target what that gift and talent it is, I believe that we can cause a turnaround in their life for the future. We have to understand that, and I, as you've called me as a person of faith, the God who created us is a speaking being. And he says in the New Testament, my words, they are spirit and they are life. You can't imagine what having that positive affirmation or saying to that person, you have something to live for, or you have a talent that is incredible. The rappers, the artists, the runners, the jumpers. I just spoke to a 15-year-old girl yesterday, and I just watched a video of her doing the triple jump. I'll probably give you her name privately. Just from what I saw in this girl, I think she's going to be great someday. The average person may not see that now, but I said it to her. These positive words of affirmation to people who are going through difficult times right now, it gives them the strength and the courage to go on. And so that's the level I'm speaking at now to say, because we don't want to enforce the idea that there is no hope. You're probably going to die in the next couple of days. No, we want to speak life. And you, as people hear the words of affirmation, faith is built up inside of them, and they have the will and determination to go forward, because there is something in them that will create a better tomorrow if they only believe.
And I
hope that doesn't sound too philosophical.
Yeah, no, not at all. I totally agree with that. I'm going to throw this at you, right? You know, take it as objectively as possible. As an individual of faith, and most specifically as an individual who follows the Christian traditions, let's assume that you are in a conversation with a Rastafarian or a Muslim, a person who is in need, right? Have real needs, but is diametrically opposed to the philosophy which you just laid out just now. What conversation are you having with that individual?
Well, if it is made aware to me with their belief or lack.
No, you know. I'm putting an individual in front of you.
If I know what the deal is with them, first thing I'm going to do is and this is my strategy for the inner city effort. I always show respect to the person who's in front of me. Mm-hmm. My mother taught me this. My mother taught, if you may not believe what a person believes, but the fact that they have a belief is something that should be respected. And so that's my starting point. I show honor to what they believe and what they respect. And to not be offensive, I'm going to hopefully, through my conduct, through my speech and how I treat them, cause them to wonder what is the modus operandi behind why I do what I do. And so I'm going to go more action-based than trying to challenge or speak in a manner that will be offensive to them. I'm not going to deny my faith. I'm going to say what my faith is. And at the same time, because I have the confidence that my faith is the faith that is true, the one true God, I truly believe this. I don't force it upon people, but I speak to you as though the same God that I believe in is the God who is the Father and the source of your life. So I'm going to speak encouragement to them. I'm going to tell them that greatness is on the inside of them. I'm going to tell them that things may be bad right now, but there, once you have life, there is hope of a better tomorrow. So to go back into my faith, I can't stop thinking about the incidents of when the prophet Elijah meets the widow of Zarephath, and she has one meal. I said, we're about to die after we eat this one meal. And the prophet doesn't give her any kind of pity party. He doesn't even show a whole lot of empathy at all. All he's like, don't die yet. Before you die, give me some of the food. So I want you to have an exchange with me. And when you give me of your substance, I'm going to release something supernatural into your life. Who knew that the next day would begin one of the richest seasons of her entire life?
And that's such a powerful point to go to a break. We are having a discussion with Ambassador Devon Roll. He won't be able to be with us for the entire program. But as you've been listening, certainly provide us with some insight. And so when we come back on the other side, I want to hear from you, Ambassador Roll. How have you been experienced? What experience have you had with persons coping? How are these persons coping? What are the men doing? What are the women doing? What are the kids doing? How are the persons within your congregation, within your community, within your ministry? Because obviously you are touching many, many communities across the Bahamas. You're listening to The Essentials, The Reset. We're having a conversation here with Ambassador Devon Roll. And when we come back, we're going to continue. So don't move. Come right back.
So serious.
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Balu's pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Balu's, Nassau East South. Call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Balu's, the jerk with the soul of reggae and the spirit of Junkanoo. Balu's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
The Nassau Guardian has delivered news and views that matter since 1844. Now, the Nassau Guardian app is available at your fingertips. Download it at Google Play or the App Store. Get the best in news and commentary from the most trusted newspaper in the country with the Nassau Guardian app.
And welcome back to The Essentials, The Reset on Guardian Radio 96.9. I'm your host, Hubert Edwards. We're having a conversation with Ambassador Devon Roll. He is a man of faith. He leads a congregation. He is into music, producing. But more importantly, for the purpose of this conversation, he runs the Social Assistance Initiative called City Touch Initiative. Community Touch Initiative, CTI, kind of sound like city. And this initiative serves the individuals from the inner city. And according to him, he has, through this program, touched thousands of Bahamians across Nassau and in the family of islands. And he does this by going into person's home, asking for permission to share a word of encouragement, to share prayer, provide them with some food. But he also comes away with the experience and the observation that in many, many instances, the circumstances in which persons are living is dire, especially as it relates to them providing for themselves. The fridge only has a bottle of water and nothing else. It's a state of affairs, I think, which many of us in the Bahamas today is not fully cognizant of. It's a state of affairs which many of us who may have trod that road has quickly forgotten. Some persons have forced themselves to forget because they don't want to be a part of that. Some persons, you know, consistently turn a blind eye to it. And in some individuals' mind, the description that we are laying out here today doesn't exist in the Bahamas at all. Because in their minds, the Bahamas is a utopia. And the truth is, that type of an approach, that type of a thinking is hurting us. There are many, many individuals. And this is the message we want to get out here. We're not blaming anybody. We're not belittling any person. We're not trying to come down hard on anyone. I am saying to you that I believe that as we transition out of this health crisis, the financial crisis will linger. I am saying to you that there are some fundamental issues which existed long before now, was made worse, but we had the benefit of the issues being spotlighted. We now know them and appreciate them much better than before. It means that we are more knowledgeable and we should be in a better position to respond more effectively. It means that collectively we are smarter, we have more data, we have more information to inform policy. It means that as an individual, as a citizen or resident, I am greater aware, I am more aware of how I can help another person. It means that, just like Ambassador Role has done, each of us need to accrue unto ourselves the obligation, give ourselves a mission, a project to help others. And so we start the show by talking about Take Five. And that's what it is. It's not anything significant. It's not anything which is going to cause you to have a huge obligation. Just simply say, every single day I eat lunch, and today, this week, I am going to take $5 from the collective amount that I spend on lunch, and I'm going to give that to somebody. Because it could change an individual life, at least for that moment. And so as we go back to Ambassador Role, my question to you is, in your experience, what are you seeing? How are the men coping? We always talk, and I'm sure you as a man of faith, we talk about the man being the head, man taking the lead. So when the men, where the men go is usually where the community go. And where how the pressure hits the man could have a fundamental impact on the family structure, on the community. Talk to us about your experience from this perspective.
That's a very good question, Brother Hubert. For the Bahamian male, as I would imagine for men the world over, this pandemic has been a very humbling period. Prior to the pandemic, we already had certain social disparities with a lot of the men not being as educated as they should be, not taking it seriously, in many cases not encouraged to take it seriously. We have already established that we have a fathering issue in the country, and many people say that it is the major issue because when you study the prison, 90%+ of the men in the prison never had a father or father figure in their life. When you go to statistics and ask about the babies being born in the last 10, 15 years, over 90% born to women giving birth to these children, not married, not even in a stable relationship, and many don't even, some are not even sure who the father is. But on top of that, joblessness has been a critical factor even before the pandemic. And so again, my definition of hustling, a lot of men were relegated to hustling and not on a job. So the ones who were on jobs, in many cases, they were sent home. And this has been a harsh reality, even in the church, because in many cases, we have seen people 3, 4, 5, and 6 months behind on their rent and begging for leniency by the landlord. Landlord is going through too because the landlord has bills to pay. And so this has really been a very stretching period. Mm-hmm. One of the things that from my church position that we were doing, I was very intentional. Even now, every Wednesday, we have a prayer at 1 o'clock and then again at 6:30. And on our prayer list is praying for heads of households who do not have employment. We've been praying for job opportunities to open up. We've been praying for them to have creative ideas on how to use their gifts and talents to bring in income. And there's a scripture, there's a scripture in Proverbs that says the heart of the king is in the hand of the Lord. And so we've been praying that and the kings in that context are people of means. So we've been praying that people of means, that their hearts would be softened and do more to help those who are disenfranchised. And again, I want to say that we have seen that in this country to the credit of many. We've seen more feeding organizations started. We've seen the government put his hand in the coffers to feed people on a consistent basis. We've seen more and more churches join us in coming out of the four walls to go and feed people. And so that has been helpful. And at the same time, still hard for some men, even though they're not working, even though they don't have means, it's still a process for them to humble themselves to the point to receive from people. And so that has been a challenge. A lot of the women have been really holding up the stagger and pushing hard and doing whatever they could as much as possible to assist in the running of these homes. And as we know, many of these homes are run by women by themselves in any event. But what I want to say is that I do see a silver lining, because my father always taught me that whenever you see construction begin to pick up in a country, mm-hmm. that's a good sign for its economy. And I do see some building efforts that are going on. You know, the building has consistently been going on in places like Abaco and some of the other islands. So there is hope. And we've been doing our part to encourage the men to continue to press. This season has to come to an end at some point.
How do you help, and, you know, again, respectfully, beyond the prayer, how does persons in your fraternity, and I'm just looking about at how we move forward from here. How do we help our brothers and sisters prepare for what's coming down the pipe, for, you know, helping them to reskill, to reorient,
yes.
to better deal with the maybe narrowing of financial resources? How do we, who find ourselves in a little bit better off circumstance, come together, put our minds and our heart together to make it better for the average individual who have a need at this point and will have a need going forward?
Excellent, excellent question. The first thing I'm going to say, but I'm very serious, they need to continue to listen to your show because you have a phenomenal mind. That's number one. But number two, let me tell you one of the other things that the CTI was so powerful in communicating. I was very intentional with the grocery bag effort of telling many people how much the bag cost. Let me tell you why I did that. Because I observed that as hard a time as we are going through economically, there are still so many people who are spending money on fast food, and on a whole lot of unnecessary things that pretty much deplete whatever monies they get in, whether they get it from work or the kindness of somebody. And so one of the things that needs to happen, and I've been saying this long before the pandemic, is our mindset on the way we handle money needs to change. I always tell people, wealth or acquiring wealth is not so much about your salary, it's more about what you do with what you have. Mm-hmm. Because if I make $1,000 a day, but I spend $1,200 a day, I am still broke. I am still in debt. And this is why the scripture says that poverty is a mindset and will be always. Unless you have a changed mind, you will always be at the bottom looking up. But if the person who makes $1,000 spends $1,200 a day, and the person who makes $200 spends $50 a day, who's going to have money at the end of the week? The person who makes $200. So our mindset and how we handle money needs to change. If the grocery bags that I have given out now in the thousands, had in it sometimes grits, rice, corned beef, tuna, cereal, sugar, Kool-Aid, and bread, and these bags basically between $15 to $20. And the bags fed a family of five for about approximately 3 days to our calculation, which means every time we went out with 100 to 120 bags, we fed 500 to 600 people for 3 days. And I'm saying to them, instead of spending $20 a day on fast food and you're hungry 2 hours later, Maybe sometimes you need to make the fast food a treat for the weekend and do better purchases with the money you have in the grocery store. So mindset change needs to happen. Two, we need to get out of the clouds in terms of this spirit of pride that certain jobs you don't want to do. Because as much as we say jobs are not here, there are still tons of people coming in from everywhere. And when I say everywhere, I mean everywhere, all over the world. And they are gainfully employed because there are certain jobs that people have trained themselves in this country that, oh, we're not doing that job. Are you crazy? My mother sent all of her children, God bless her soul, she just passed away months ago, sent all of us to school and to university. And she said to us, I'm not sending you, because we tried to argue with her, Mommy, we don't want to go to college. We don't want to do that. She says, I don't care what you want to do. You're going to go to college even if you don't work in that area, because I need some employer, some investment to see that you have the ability and the mindset to finish something. She said, if you get your degree and you come back and start a cleaning company, I'm fine. Just do it to the best of your ability. So a mindset change needs to happen in many quarters.
In your organization, Ambassador Rose, are you providing counseling? What type of social, psychological, psychosocial support are you providing through your organization? Do you have a counseling ministry? Are you yourself a counselor? Talk to us about that and maybe what you're seeing in terms of what persons are displaying.
Okay, well, let me share this. What was amazing too, when we started the initiative, and it's crazy how God started to do this. On a monthly basis, that we went into homes in a particular area, somehow I usually always ended up in an area where a vicious crime, whether it was murder or not, just happened. And in many cases, I ended up not just praying, but counseling family members. I would never forget this one particular occasion where the young lady who was, it's so sad to even recall the story, she was murdered while she held a baby in her hands somewhere in the Fort Hill. And the guy shot her and left her there. I went to that home the next morning with a grocery bag. And the family had like 30 people in the yard. They were crying all of their energy out. And I went, I gave multiple bags of grocery. I prayed with them. But I didn't talk first. I just sang songs because it was too painful in an atmosphere. And once I had ministered to them and spoken a word of encouragement to them, I was about to leave. And then a young man was coming out the back house like he was going somewhere with a spirit of anger in him out of this world. I turned around immediately and went straight to him, not knowing what I was going to do, you know. I went to him and then I embraced him. And when I embraced him, I said in his ears, let God do it. Don't do it. If God does it, nobody can arrest God. And when I said it to him, he cried like a baby. He was the young lady's brother. And I believe he was on the way to exact vengeance. Just me being there, speaking that word of counsel into his ear, he cried and then asked me, believe it or not, he asked me to lead him to Christ, which I did. So, but we're engaged in counseling. The effort provides many opportunities for us to do that. We're open to it. I have a few people in my ministry who are actually equipped in the discipline. There's one lady in my church, she actually has a doctorate degree in counseling. And I want to add this one factor here too. But counseling only works to the extent that people are ready to receive counsel. This is so important because we still have a lot of people who do not want to allow people into their inner spaces where they actually need the help. And this is a mindset in our Western hemisphere that needs to change. Counseling doesn't mean you failed. It's a matter of wisdom. Proverbs 11:14 says that there is safety in the multitude of counsel. So I want to encourage people where you're hurting. There's somebody who's not hurting where you're hurting. They've been there and they've overcome. So open up your heart to receive knowledge from those who know better than you presently do.
And that is, I think it's so important in terms of helping persons to understand that even though the moment is dark, even though the circumstances are challenging, there's always a path.
Yeah.
But really, even as we direct persons to that light, if you will, we have to be mindful of their physical needs. We have to be mindful of their social needs. We have to be mindful of their psychological needs. And next week, we'll be having a counselor, a doctor, who will be here to continue this conversation. I think it's such an important conversation. You know,
yes, it is.
There are many persons out there, Ambassador Rule, who are suffering in silence. Suffering, yes, because of pride in some instances. You talk about moving from middle class to, you know, having to go stand on the food line. But you have individuals who are in your fraternity. They're Christians. They're pastors. Mm-hmm. They're suffering in silence. There's the young man or the man who lost his job and can no longer provide for the family the way he used to do, and he's suffering in silence. There's the woman who, as a result of the change in circumstance, is now facing abuse, and the children are facing abuse. There are so many complex things which are emanating, not just from because of this crisis, just because we are human beings and this is how things play out, but certainly the extra pressure which has been brought to bear as a result of the circumstances that we are facing now has enhanced or made things even much more significant. And we have to get to the place where we help persons to understand that it's okay to not be silent anymore. It's okay to speak up. It's okay to be vulnerable and speak and be willing to speak to someone, because only when we get to the point where we start to open up, as you said, will there be resolution? Will there be healing? Will there be an opportunity for moving from the point that you're at to someplace else?
Yeah. And it's amazing. There is a scripture as well that says, at the end of days, they overcome by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. The word of the testimony part is so powerful, because many people will survive a test if they hear that somebody else has gone through similar and come through on top. This is why opening up for counsel and guidance is so very important. Because if I understand that, you know what, like somebody might say, I got raped, or I got fired, or this thing happened to me, but I meet somebody who looks like they have it all together, and they said, you know what, I went through the same thing and more, but I came out of it. That testimony gives that person in that moment of despair hope and the courage to go and face one more day. As we went, you know, one of the biggest devastations, I think, of this COVID-19 pandemic was the fact that when people went into the hospital and they couldn't have the access of their loved ones, just to touch, to speak a word of confidence, or to speak a word of hope, or to say a prayer, I think that factor caused many more lives than the disease itself. Because as human beings, we are creatures of touch, we're creatures of communication. And if we hear the right communication, it gives us hope and inspiration to go another day. Scientists say that when you hear words like, I love you, or you things are gonna get better, it causes good hormones to be released. And at the same time, when you hear negative words and negative experiences, it causes toxins and poisons in your body to be released. So imagine if in that moment of need, I can hear the right word at the right time, it can inspire my bad situation to be turned around by a posture of faith.
Mm-hmm. And that is so, so important. You know, we could have this conversation. We could go on forever and a day. I know that you had to make some rearrangements to be with us. But as we close out this segment, I want you to take some time, Ambassador Rule. And I want you to leave persons listening with some encouragement. I want you to speak to individuals, not simply from esoteric philosophical point of view. Yeah. I'm not trying to shoot down. I know you're a pastor and you can go at it, right? But I think while that is important, it's very, very important to have a philosophical grounding. I think it's also important that when we speak to individual, we also become very practical and reach them where they are so that they can understand. And later on, we can take them up on the philosophical pulpit. But right now, I want you to speak to that guy in Baintown, in Fox Hill, somebody out there in Kemp Road, the individual, the mother who is struggling, the father who is feeling the frustration, the student who is struggling with virtual school or no school, haven't been to school at all. It's over to you, sir.
Thank you, sir. What I want to say to every Bahamian listening to me now, if you are hearing the sound of my voice, you are extremely blessed and privileged. Over the last 2.5 years, the world has saw the departure of thousands of people just from this one virus situation that hit the world unexpectedly. The fact that you are still here means that not only are you blessed, you are strong. It also means that you still have purpose and there is something that you have to offer. No storm lasts forever. No storm lasts forever. And so, and even as they say in the East, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step. This morning, this very day, I had to talk to somebody who just lost their mother. And I can identify with them because I lost my mother last year as well. And I spoke a word of encouragement to them. And I said to them, your mother's season has come to an end. You're going to cry, but cry with hope. And not only cry with hope, but cry with an understanding that because of her faith, you're going to see her again. Mm-hmm. But know that your time is limited. So be strengthened quickly and continue to work the purpose that you have. And I told him, take it one step at a time, one day at a time. I even said one breath at a time. So though things have been tough, you're still here. And so you have an opportunity today and tomorrow, God spares your life, to create a better future. What is key, however, also is in terms of your faith and your work effort is patience. Sometimes we get discouraged because we are very impatient and we want to see things change now. If you change that mindset and say, you know what, I'm in this for the long haul. It may be tough now, but I want to continue to take one step after the other and believe that my future is going to be better than my past. You will make it. You will survive.
Okay. Thank you so much. I think that's a powerful, very powerful place to be. I think somebody's trying to call in. As soon as we get that person sorted out, we definitely will put them on. The person's there now. Okay, caller, you're on The Essentials. Welcome to The Essentials before Ambassador Rowe leaves.
Mr. Edwards.
Go ahead.
Excellent in your ways, I must say. But I was listening to you talking about the philosophical part of life.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a question. Had not Jesus Christ give us all the philosophies we needed?
I don't know if Jesus Christ gave us all the philosophy we needed.
Stop that. Don't say
hold
that.
Hold on. Allow me to answer. And, I think Ambassador Rowe said something very, very important earlier. You know, depending on who you're talking to, you have to be willing to create space that somebody may disagree with you, right? Slightly. Yeah? But certainly the Christian tradition, the philosophy behind the Christian tradition is sound, it's fundamental, and it followed in a way which is, I think is Christ-like. I think that is very, very important. If followed in a way which is Christ-like, it can be very empowering for the individual, and obviously it will be empowering for other persons who are impacted and the community. You still there? We've lost him. Okay, we seem to have lost him, but you can call back. Are you still there, Pastor Ambassador Rowe? No?
I'm still here.
Okay, so,
I have to go, but I'm still here.
Yeah, so I know you have to go. So maybe you want to, use that as your exit thing. He asks about, isn't the philosophy which was given by Christ all sufficient? Everything is there?
Well, I wish I had opportunity to engage him so I don't guess what he means by that. But I mean, as I subscribe to the teachings of Christ, I believe and what he gave were the principles for any individual to have a successful life. It is amazing when people study Christ, even if they weren't followers. I'm thinking of, Gandhi, who said that he loves Christ. He loved his teaching. They were incredible. His challenge were that when he saw the representatives of Christ, he didn't think they looked like what he taught.
Right.
But I believe the principles espoused by Christ are the keys for a successful life. And on another show, we can go deeper into that. But I'll just leave it there for today.
Definitely. I think you said it better. That's exactly what I was trying to explain to him. At the end of the day, all of the things which are espoused through the Christian tradition comes down to the fact that you must be more Christ-like, because there's so many of us who say, yeah, Jesus. But you know, it becomes difficult to reconcile the yeah with your actions and your
No fruits.
Thank you so much, Ambassador Roll, for joining us. We're going to take a break here. It was certainly a pleasure having this conversation with you. It seems as if we have started something which we must continue at another time. Thanks for shifting your schedule and making this visit. So we look forward to future interactions.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much, man. I look forward to it as well. Thank you for the opportunity.
All the best. You listen to The Essentials, The Reset. We'll take a break here, and when we come back, we will have a bit of a dialogue. If you join me, if not, it will be a monologue. We'll talk about just some very nice things. Very, very nice things. Huge. Trump-like. Don't move. Come right back.
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Balu's. Pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Balu's, Nassau East South. Call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Balu's, the jerk with the soul of reggae and the spirit.
The Nassau Guardian has delivered news and views that matter since 1844. Now, the Nassau Guardian app is available at your fingertips. Download it at Google Play or the App Store. Get the best in news and commentary from the most trusted newspaper in the country with the Nassau Guardian app.
And welcome back to The Essentials, The Reset. We just had what I think was a wonderful conversation with Ambassador Devon Roll. It's amazing sometimes you kind of buck up on these persons. This is the absolutely first time, the first day I've ever interacted with him. We had such a wonderful forward to hearing from him again. We want to encourage him in his ministry, you know, feeding persons, helping out individuals in the community, and to those of you out there who can provide support, whether you're a business house, whether you're an individual who have a couple of dollars that can support them, you know, then, you know, slip him that slow five. As we say, it's about take five. Slip him that slow five. He can put it together with a couple other fives, and he will have a farther reach than you can. And that's what this is all about. It's about corporate effort, putting our treasures, our time, and our things together so that we can help others in a bigger way. So let us make this shift. Again, if you want to call in still, the number is 323-6232, 325-4316, or 325-4259. The text line is 422-4796. So let's split this shift. Let this darkness be a bell tower. And this is a poem by Rainer Maria Rilke. Rainer is actually a man. I don't know why his name is Maria, but I guess he was born a long time ago. But it's such a, it's a wonderful poem. It's a beautiful poem. And I think it's a poem which speaks to us right here, right now, today. And it says some very powerful things. I'm going to read this for you as best as I can. It says, quiet friend who has come so far, feel how your breathing makes more space around you. Let this darkness be a bell tower and you the bell as you ring. As you ring, what batters you become your strength. Move back and forth into the change. What is it like? Such intensity of pain. If the drink is bitter, turn yourself to wine. In this uncontainable night, be the mist at the crossroad of your senses, the meaning discovered there. And if the world ceases to hear you, say to the silent earth, I flow. To the rushing water, speak, I am. Such a powerful thing. Really, really powerful. I came across this today as I was going through an email I got. And the email is talking about really how we respond to life. And it says here, you know, life batters us. It does. So we find out that we have lost our job, and I'm reading from something here. I may paraphrase as I go, but I'm generally reading from something. I know that we've lost our job or someone we love. We find out that, you know, some ruling has come out against us or that a bad review was written, and we fall and we hurt ourselves. We get diagnosis. We are mistreated or attacked. We get hit hard. But there is a beautiful metaphor in the poem that I just read, we can take to heart in this. It says, let this darkness be a bell tower, and you the bell. As you ring, what batters you become your strength. Move back and forth to the change. So right here, right now, at this moment, for those of us who are going through challenging circumstances, we're going through a crisis. We have lost job. We have lost friends. We have lost loved ones. We don't know where the next meal is coming from. We had to pull the child out of university. We have to shift the child from private school. We have to adjust our lifestyle. Things are not as good as they were. This poem is saying to us, let the darkness be a bell tower. Let the moment be something on which you're going to stand, and then you become the bell. As you move back and forth, the thing which batters you, let it become your strength. And there's a book which goes by the name, The Obstacle is the Way. I would recommend that book to anyone. There's a saying which comes out of the East, as Ambassador Rule mentioned, the saying which says that a journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step. This one says, the obstacle is the path. What does that mean? The thing which is creating the blockage represents the signal of where you need to go. Right now, the battering that you are getting, which batters you back and forth, the loss of a job, is where you need to lean into. You need to become the bell. You need to start to understand, as we heard earlier, how can you creatively move out of that circumstance? So rather than cowering, rather than thinking about, we use the metaphor of a bell, and you being the thing inside there, and you're knocking your head from side to side, bang, 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 rather than you seeing that as distress, rather than you seeing this as a process which is going to kill you, rather than you seeing this as a process which is weakening you and taking away from your humanity, why don't you see this as a bell tower? And that the battering that you're taking, is an opportunity for strengthening you. In the email that I read today, it says, darkness and difficulty are not just part of life. Darkness and difficulty aren't just a part of life. They are life. They are life. I don't know if you have heard, I know, I'm sure many persons have, you know, but persons will tell you that life is not a bed of roses. And the metaphor is, you know, when you look at the rose, it's nice, it's vibrant. You know, let's use red rose. We just got through Valentine's. So life is not a bed of roses. It's not all pretty. It's not all good. The truth is, life is a bed of roses. Life is actually a bed of roses. Why they say life isn't a bed of roses? Because, you know, things are not always good. Things are not always straightforward. That's the message that they're trying to convey. My message to you is, in this moment, as Ambassador Rule did before, I'm saying to you that life is like walking through a bed of roses where you encounter the fragrance of the roses, the delicacy of the roses, the beauty of the rose, the blooms, that is. But you will also encounter very sharply, very painfully, the elegance of the thorns on those roses, the effectiveness of the design of those thorns, the viciousness of them as they tug at you or you tug at them, and you feel the pain, the pressure, the hurt, the despair. That's what life is about. But it's important that you listen to what this poem is saying. When it speaks to you, you, quiet friend who has come so far, how far have you come to this point? Are you going to turn back? Are you going to allow yourself to be thrown about because, you know, you're facing another challenge, another upheaval, another bad moment? Or are you going to grow from these moments? Are you going to put yourself in a position where you say, look, regardless of what I am faced, I am going to be in this moment a quiet friend? And it says, feel how you're breathing, make more space around you. Guess what? The fact that you're breathing, you're alive, you're here, you have ability, there are possibilities. It's not over. Let the darkness, let this darkness, let this darkness be a bell tower and you the bell. Let this darkness be a bell tower and you the bell. How are you going to do that? When a bell tolls, it's music to the ear. Or it tolls because it's providing information. It's calling persons together. It's sending out a signal. So the question is, what can you do with the challenging circumstances in the moment, right here, right now? How can you change that? How can you turn that around? You've lost your job. You used to work in the hotel. You used to be a room attendant. Maybe you can become what they call a maid for a day. You can sell your service in that regard. You can start a company because you have some friends and a couple of you are not on the job anymore. Why not come together and say, well, if the bell tolls for my job over there, I am going to ring very loudly over here because there are persons out there who need really, really, really good helpers. And guess what? While I have lost this job, and while I don't really like them people who employed me right now, I'm not feeling them, they did spend a lot training me. I got top-class training. I was one of the best. When persons walked into those hotel rooms and they complimented the hotel, they were actually, in fact, complimenting me because I did that. I contributed to that. Why don't you take that skill now and parlay that into something else? So this is what the poet is saying. As you ring, what batters you become your strength. As you ring, as you go through this moment of not having enough money, you now start to think, how can I find additional revenue? What skills do I have? What resources do I have? Oh, that mango tree that I used to ignore because I was working over there with Mr. Big, it bears thousands and thousands of mangoes every year. You know, well, this year I'm going to sell some. Maybe you never noticed them. Or you decide, back in the day, I had a passion for cooking and making jams and jellies. Why not try that this year and create a brand? Maybe you just never know where that turns out. So what batters you become your strength? You have lost your job. Because on the job, they decided that they are going to keep all of the persons who had a qualification and they will let the others go. Unfortunately, you are one that don't have a qualification. What is that saying to you? The obstacle is the path. What is stopping you or what stopped you from being retained in the moment is the fact that you didn't have a qualification. But you're a smart person. You're brilliant. You're just not disciplined enough. You just didn't spend the time enough because you had enough money. But right here, right now, there's an opportunity for you to go to BVI. Or to go back to UB. And you take this opportunity to say the thing which batters you, the whip being without a qualification, is the impetus, the thing I'm going to use as the impetus to change my life around. Because guess what? The moment you get that qualification, you're light years ahead of an individual who now only has a qualification. Because you have the experience. You have been at it for a while. You're an expert in this era. You just don't have the demonstrated requirement that they're asking for. So you grow from strength and you learn. And you realize that, you know, being on the job and not upgrading yourself consistently and doing personal development is not the way to go. So the next time, now with your qualification in hand, when you're in another job and they're offering training and they're offering development and they have facilities which says they will pay for you, you suck up all of that and you use it to the best of your ability. You're now stronger. The thing which battered you, you use it as a source of strength. Move back and forth into change. Move back and forth into change. You notice it didn't say move forth into change. Because just like the bell, just like the thing in the bell which goes back and forth and knock on both sides and make the sound, you're going to find yourself drifting. It's not going to be a straight line between here and there. It's not going to be a straight line between the circumstance you're in now where you're suffering or you're struggling to massive success and where everything is going to be nice and rosy and blissful. No, you're going to drift back sometime, but you have to keep moving because it's that drifting which, after all, as far as the bell is concerned, which creates the music. It asks a question. The poem asks a question. What is it like? Such intensity of pain. So to you, I ask, what does it feel like in this moment? What does it feel like when you're going through this crisis, when you're going through whatsoever it is that's hurting you at this moment, a loss of job, breakup of relationship, reduced income, watching the children struggle to get food, to be back in school, battling with the idea of finding devices and keeping up the internet and so on and so forth. What does that feel like? How intense is that pain? You as a mother, you as a father, watching your child who is brilliant, you know that that child is brilliant because after all, it's your child and there is brilliance in you and brilliance in them. But they struggle from the fact that while you can pass around the one device that you have from time to time, you just have to grab it back because you're on the job hunting. Yeah? And it's just not sufficient. That intensity of pain, the moment when you look into your child's eyes and you see the hunger, the pain, you know that it's there and you can't do anything about it, at least not in the moment. You are hoping, you're praying that a ambassador will turn up with a bag of grocery. Somebody comes by to give you a helping hand because you are at a place where you just can't. The intensity of that pain needs to drive you because that pain will go away when you start to act, when you start to do something different. Because as bad as it feels, as hopeless as you feel, as much as you believe that you have absolutely nothing, if you harness that pain, if you harness that circumstance, and you tell yourself that, look, I am going to do at least one thing which is going to change this. So tomorrow, rather than sit at home and wait for the possibility of a Good Samaritan to pass, why not walk out to the street? Why not inquire about a job? Why not go and help somebody? Even though you may not get money, there may be a possibility for you to be paid in kind. Maybe you get some food, which will last you for a couple of days. Why not start to inquire about that online course? Why not start to ask about which educational opportunities are there which are free and I don't have to pay any money. Because guess what? You are spending hours sitting down, bearing the pain anyway. If you can just get through a couple of hours study per day, you're that much closer. So when it says, what is it like? I'm asking you, what is your life like right here, this moment? What is your circumstances like? Such intensity of pain, such suffering, such hurt, such not feeling good. Or we could change this around, right? And we could make it not painful. But what does it feel like? The possibility of growth, the possibility of growing, the ambition which is burning inside of you, the desire, the great idea which is forming in your mind, what does that feel like? How are you going to act on it? What is it that you're going to do to move this forward? And I think the poet says something very, very powerful here. Very, very powerful, I think. He says, if the drink is bitter, so if your circumstances is not good at this moment, if what you're drinking, what you're experiencing, if all that which is going on around you, within you, above you, and through you is bitter, right? Don't worry about it. He says, turn yourself into wine. Turn yourself into wine. So make it more palatable. And the way you're going to do that, I think, is by changing your mindset. We heard that earlier. We have to now start to rethink. Bad situation, is it going to hurt me? Am I going to allow it to hurt me? Or am I going to say, here is an opportunity for me to become better? Turn yourself into wine. So in this uncontainable night, be the mystery at the crossroad of your senses, the meaning discovered there. Yes. Be the mystery at the crossroad of your senses. So bring all of your senses together. Stand at the crossroad, because guess what? The meaning of what this uncontainable night, of what the circumstances is, can be discovered within. In your mind, in your thinking, in your analysis, as a result of asking questions, as a result of seeking guidance and counsel and mentorship, it is there. That intensity of pain can be solved within. And guess what? The good news is, and I can say this to you without fear of being proven wrong, that when you start to face up with the pain, with that intensity of pain, when you start to grapple with that on the inside, all of a sudden, your life becomes better without anything on the outside changing. In the first instance, believe me, you may sound mumbo-jumbo to you, but trust me on this. All of a sudden, the circumstance which you are dealing with becomes a little bit better, because you start to see it in a different from a different perspective, in a different light. And it now becomes an opportunity for empowerment, while in the first instance, it was debilitating. That's where the change is. And I like how this thing ends. And so if you want, it's online, you can go and you can check it out. The title of the poem is Let This Darkness Be a Bell Tower. I would commend anyone to take a quick, nice, silent read. I printed 2 copies this morning. I gave one to my son. I can't guarantee you that he reads it. He usually don't read anything I give to him, or at least he pretends not to. But hopefully he does. But it ends this way. And if the world has ceased to hear you, and if the world has ceased to hear you, how many of us today feel that nobody is listening, that nobody longer cares, that nobody longer takes the time to appreciate what we are going through? So if the world has ceased to hear you, say to the silent earth, I flow. So because they're not listening to you, because they're not paying you any mind, because they're not coming to your rescue, remind them that I flow. And what I flow may mean, well, you know, think about a river. I'm flowing. I have energy. There is life still here. I'm still moving forward. I have the opportunity to do things. I'm not yet dead. I'm still going through. Even though you are ignoring me, even though you are not listening to me, even though you are not helping me to provide for where I want to go, what I want to do, I flow. And by telling the silent earth that, by silent earth, you know, them people who won't listen to you, them people who won't pay you any mind, them people who don't think you are enough to spend some time with, just say to them, I flow, I still am, I have energy, I have my life force within me. Because I believe the act of saying that to the silent ears, the act of saying that to the silent earth is actually speaking to self, to remind you, me reminding me that I flow, me reminding me that I have energy, you reminding you that it's not over. I flow. I have energy. I can do this. And then it says, to the rushing water, I am. And we spoke earlier to a man of the Christian tradition. He's a pastor. He leads a flock. And many, many of us out there are Christians. We know the power of I am. I am good. I am great. I am capable. I am successful. I am worthy. I am talented. I have the ability to. I am. So we keep saying to ourselves, we keep repeating those affirmations. We keep looking at the dire moments in front of us, but we counter them every single step with the possibility of what we can do. Again, we go to the Christian tradition, which says, let the weak say, I am strong. How must a weak man say, I am strong? He's weak. But there has to be a genius to this whole thing. There's a genius to understanding that when you start to say, I am strong, you're likely to behave as if you are strong. So I want to commend every single person under the sound of my voice. If you're out there and you're struggling, don't give up. Don't give up. Don't give in. Don't run away. Don't hide. Let this moment of darkness becomes your bell tower. And let your bell toll so loud that the whole world will hear you. And keep reminding those who won't listen that I flow. And speak to the rushing waters that I am. And I want to leave you. We always leave you this way. Do not allow your greatness to become a victim of your unwillingness to change. So the only thing left to say is walk good, be safe, one love, and Ubuntu. Good night. Essential. Essential. You know it's so essential.